Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen any time of day or night, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to welcome Danny Schechter. He's a filmmaker, troublemaker, and journalist. His latest film is called In Debt We Trust, America Before the Bubble Bursts. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, great to be with you, and hope to be maybe even meeting you when I come out to New Mexico.
The film is screening at the Center for Contemporary Arts on Thursday and Friday. The United States is in an unprecedented moment in its economic history, which your film points out in great detail. We have a situation in which people spend more than they earn. They save nothing at all. This has never happened before. How and when did it get this way?
Well, you know, this is a crisis that, in a sense, has been building for a long time. It's not really paid much attention to in the media, as long as the cash registers keep ringing. You know, the people who own the malls and own the stores and own the companies that make the goods are pretty pleased. But everyone who's looked at this in this country and overseas is extremely worried about the reliance on credit and debt and the way our country has moved from a country that was based on production, the factory is the icon of economic progress, to the mall and consumption, which is now driving our economy. So you'll remember right after 9/11, President Bush's first speech to the nation, he called on people to go back. It's safe to go shopping again, you know, go back to the stores, because the economic engine of our country today is, on one hand, consumption. On the other hand, the debt that drives the consumption, the people who are buying things on credit cards, taking out loans, turning their homes into ATM machines by equity loans and the like, and getting deeper and deeper into debt. We used to be in a country where having a credit card was prestigious. It was a luxury. Then it became a necessity. And now for many people, it's a noose around our heads. And, you know, for many young people in school, they're leaving college with $40,000 in debt. This affects people across the spectrum of American life. And as long as, you know, the economy is booming and everything's booming, it seems to be going well, except, you know, there are signs of big trouble here. The housing slump, for example, the so-called bubble bursting in the housing market led to a 400-point drop in the stock market, led to, the collapse of the so-called subprime lending and loans, which was inflating the whole economy in many ways. And all of this is also part of a way in which leverage, people relying on these loans at the corporate level, you know, are in a very unhealthy situation because they have to pay it back, of course. They're accumulating more and more debt without much of a long-term prognosis on how they're going to pay it back.
So there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. Let's start with the production.
Tell me about it. Well, I try to unpack it in this film, In Debt We Trust, and I only really cover the surface.
I know. It's amazing. There's so much that's covered in this, from payday lending to consumer mortgage scams, home improvement scams. But let's this question of what's the difference between a production economy and an consumption economy? Aren't they two sides of the same coin? Don't you have to produce
in order to
consume?
Could be, but in an age of globalization, so much production and so many jobs have been moved offshore, as they say. More and more money invested in China, in Mexico, and other places. Trade enabling us to get things made by workers who are only making a fraction of what American workers made. So, you know, this is a function in a way of this global economy, except this debt crisis is not just an American phenomenon. It's increasingly an international phenomenon, with many countries reporting similar problems, and a lot of eyes looking at this and are worried about it. You know, Greenspan, who was always reassuring us about how everything was great, you know, is projecting a recession, you know, and Fox News said, why doesn't Alan Greenspan shut up, you know, as if by saying it will make it true.
There's a devil's bargain in here, which is that people are spending more than they earn, and Yet if they cut back on their consumption, then the economy collapses. But if they don't cut back on their consumption, the economy collapses too eventually.
Yeah, well, this is the paradox here. You know, you can't – I'm not in the blame the people school, though, you know, my old employers, I used to work at ABC's 2020 show, and the great John Stossel over there, you know, who loves to blame the people for the problems of America, you know, blame the debtors for debt without, you know, at all looking at the institutions, the credit card companies, the banks, the financial institutions behind all this. And no wonder they were advertising on his program. So, you know, there's the blame the people school of thought. And the other school of thought is to look at how the society has been what I call financialization of the American economy. This is, you know, a trend towards more and more power emanating from what I would call a credit and loan complex, every bit as insidious as the military-industrial complex. These are the big banks, the investment houses, the hedge funds, the people who are controlling the money in society. As a journalist, as a young journalist, I learned the phrase, you know, follow the money, and you'll find out what's really behind a lot of the scandals and problems in our society. And I think if you follow the money here, you'll see how lucrative this is, how there's been a gigantic transfer of wealth from middle-class, working-class people into the vaults of these institutions. That's why, you know, Goldman Sachs could give out $16.8 billion last year in Christmas bonuses, okay? Some people are doing very, very, very well, and a lot of people are not doing well at all. In fact, that their economic situation is declining. If you have a suburban home, you're outside of Albuquerque, let's say, you have to drive to work, the gasoline prices are up, the cost of education is up, the cost of food is up, et cetera, but your salary is not up. You're not making, more money. You're going to be in a squeeze. And at the end of the month, you got to figure out how are you going to pay those bills. Everybody wants what everybody else has, okay? Everybody goes to the mall. They see all the, you know, glitzy things there. They want them. You know, of course they do. You know, that's the nature of our economy. You know, shop till you drop, buy. You know, but the consequences of it, you know, are not always apparent to people. And people also treat money as an individual problem. They don't see how they have issues in common with others. You know, that if they're behind on their bills, they think, well, it's my fault. I was stupid. I signed that credit card agreement, not aware of the fact that that credit card agreement is every bit as stacked against them as going to play in Las Vegas, where the house always wins. You know, there's been a deregulation of consumer protections that's gone on for, you know, 10 or more years. There's a very powerful lobby in Congress that's bipartisan in its approach, lobbying, let's say, for the new bankruptcy bill to give even more money for, you know, these lenders to allow them to be unregulated and go forward with you know, their practices, predatory practices that are not really being scrutinized to preempt the power of, for example, local or state banks to, you know, have any control over this. A lot of banks become national banks, so they can't be regulated at all. The whole, you know, legal system is sort of stacked against the ordinary consumer. And just ask any of you people, ask anybody in your audience. They'll tell you. One of the things, the experiences I've had with this film is wherever I've screened it, and I'm going to be screening in your neighborhood, you know, soon, you know, is what you get is what are called topper stories. You know, people stand up, you know, who are a little embarrassed to start talking about it. Then they start telling you, you know, you think what you're showing is bad? Let me tell you about my cousin, my aunt, my uncle. You know, they have a litany of stories from their own personal experience, you know, of how and why they got behind. Maybe it was divorces. Maybe it was medical bills. Maybe it was increases in their adjustable rate mortgages. But in any event, they're having a harder and harder time paying their bills.
We're talking to Danny Schechter. The film is called In Debt We Trust. I think two of the themes that are going on that underlie all of this are, number one, the upward flow of wealth from the poorest and middle people, whether they be factory workers in third world countries who are making the products we consume, or whether they be the poor to middle class people in the United States, and simultaneously the lack of a social safety net.
You're absolutely right. This is a structural problem in our economy, it's also a reflection of the way in which power and wealth is completely, unequal in our society, growing inequality, growing power concentrated in fewer hands in the economy, politicians who lack the ability, in many cases, the will to take on these interests. So this is not just an economic problem, it's a political crisis as well. And, you know, it's something that we need to start talking about. Here in New York State, for example, the Attorney General discovered that Sallie Mae, one of the big lenders, college lenders, were giving gifts and presents to all sorts of financial administrators in colleges, so that they would steer their students to more expensive loans rather than to government-supported cheaper loans. In other words, there's a tremendous amount of corruption that's part of this whole problem, and a total lack of scrutiny and regulation by our media as well. You know, the New York Times finally started reporting on these subprime loans after the crisis became pronounced, not before, to warn about it. So this is a big problem, in the media as well, that they tend to rely on certain sources and they really don't hear from the people who are often in economic pain over all of this. The people, the 2 million American families facing foreclosure right now. I mean, this is, obscene. This is more people than Katrina, people who are going to lose their homes maybe this year. Because of resets and adjustable rate mortgages and the like. And now it's also harder and harder to declare bankruptcy, to get a second chance, because the bankruptcy laws are now stacked against people who might qualify for bankruptcy. Just the regulations and rules just to fill out the forms, is expensive, tedious, and very, very difficult for most people.
They're watching it. There's a long section on college students, and I felt like I was watching one of those exposés of the way tobacco companies try to get young people hooked, in the same way credit card companies try to get freshmen in college hooked on credit cards. I also have to say I felt like an old-timer watching this thing, because when I was in college, I didn't have credit cards. Nobody I knew had credit cards.
Right.
Now,
right.
Young people are practically assaulted by these companies.
Right. Well, you have to understand that when there's a lot of money to be made in something, there are people who are going to figure out the most effective ways to market, target different demographic groups, craft messages that are especially appealing to them, and spend a lot of money. That's why we all get all these solicitations. In my movie, In Debt We Trust, we hear from a woman whose dog, Labrador, and dead at that.
A dead Labrador
still
retriever.
Approved credit from credit card companies.
I know that too. I have people whose friends get credit card for their pets.
Yeah, and this is, because the cost of sending out this mass mailing is less. They know that the return rate will only be 1% or 2%, but that pays for the mailing and, gets a lot of new people who are going to go into increasing debt. So, this has been really well thought out. There's been a lot of experience in it, that retailers, if you use credit cards, retailers are told, people will buy 25% more on the average. So, this is a system here. It's not just individual mistakes. With your credit card agreements, in many cases, they can change the agreement after you sign it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? After you agree to it, they can unilaterally change it. What other industry has that authority and that power? So this is something that we all have to look at very closely and carefully, because it's a matter for many people of just plain old economic survival. How are you going to pay your bills? How are you going to handle this? And people need, credit, because they're having a hard time making ends meet. This is not happening just because there are people who are, adding, extra swimming pools on their house. Some people are. But, by and large, most of the people who are in debt for, if not good reasons, because they didn't see any alternatives to it. That's why, I'm a filmmaker. I'm selling a movie here, of course. And we have two websites, indebtwetrust.com and a related site called StopTheSqueeze.org, where we've launched a campaign called Americans for Debt Relief Now. This is like, you know, Bono fighting for debt relief for Africa. We've got to fight for debt relief in America to stop this whole wave of foreclosures, to get a real investigation of what's going on. And when Congress has investigated recently credit cards, for example, and student lending practices, you know, it's been a scandal. They've been shocked by the practices that these companies are getting away with. You know, 100,000 veterans back from Iraq, you know, forced to take out payday loans just to survive week to week. I mean, it's a crunch on a lot of people. Where are our politicians? You know, where is the governor of New Mexico on this? Where are the senators who are speaking out on this? Harry Reid or you know, the Democrats, et cetera, et cetera. This is an issue that affects everybody, and that's why I think it's a political problem, and that's why I hope the movie can inspire people to get involved on the issue, not simply go to a movie and watch a movie. But I will say, just as your experience was, most people who do come to see the film come away saying, wow, I didn't know that.
Well, let's stay with the college students for a second, because
sure.
This is a very dire situation, to the point where you have students committing bank robbery and even suicide because of their debts.
Yeah, I mean, students don't see a way out. They feel like they've gotten in deeper and deeper. They don't know what to do. We showed the film at the Rochester Institute of Technology, not a hotbed of radicalism by any means, okay? 1,200 students came out for a session on credit cards on campus, okay? And some of them were testifying, you know, I'm $80,000 in debt. I'm $100,000 in debt. What this means is, as soon as these kids are finished with school, they have to get a job, the first job they can, to just start paying back the credit card companies.
And so they're making different career choices because of their
debt.
Right,
exactly. You can't go out and become active in a not-for-profit or non-governmental organization or work in the community when you're faced with that kind of financial pressure on you. And, you know, so, I mean, look at what's happening. 50% of the students in America are now in community colleges because they can't afford to go immediately into a four-year college. They go to community college and then they hope to jump into, you know, a four-year school after that, because of the pressures on them, you know, to be able to afford all of this. And this is across the spectrum. I sat with the president of Notre Dame University, you know, which I never, again, you know, Father Hesbury, the founding president. He said this is the most serious problem facing college students in America. And he urged college presidents to show this film, to educate, you know, the students and even students who are going to college about this problem so that they become more conscious, because we don't have enough financial literacy education in our schools, so kids know how to manage money.
There's a generation gap going on here, which has been discussed in many books and articles, but people who are baby boomers and older, whose children are now young people trying to raise a family and live middle-class lives, the older people cannot understand why the younger people can't make ends meet. What's different now than it was in the 50s
and 60s? Well, I mean, you know, A, things are more expensive. I just, you know, saw something on the internet, you know, that, you know, a stamp was 4 cents in 1960 or whatever, you know, it's now 41
cents.
Yeah,
but wages, you know, were in the four digits. I mean, annual.
You know, in other words, every all these things are more expensive, for one thing. There's also a lot more pressure because of the pervasiveness of media, you know, for kids to want to look a certain way and act a certain way and drive a certain car. And they're very, you know, impressionable, and they're targeted. You know, they're targeted very effectively, you know, using personalities, celebrities, and all the rest of that. And they want what everyone else has. And so, you know, these bills run up very quickly. They don't have any experience with managing money. You know, I come out of the scarcity economy. You know, my parents were, you know, depression, you know, survivors, if you will. You know what I mean? And so they were always very conscious of this. When I went to public school, we had, you know, a local bank came in and they gave all the kids who wanted one a bank book, and you would bring in 50 cents a week and you would learn to save. Today, nobody's saving at all. You know, and, you know, not only nobody, but our country itself is, you know, deeply in debt to China. You know, capitalism is being saved by communism in China. I mean, these are some of the ironies, of our existence today, and something that should be worrisome to people, because we're losing control over these institutions. And these, you know, what they do is with these mortgages, as soon as you get a mortgage, the mortgage is then sold into what are called securitization trusts on Wall Street. And then that money is then leveraged, mixed with other money, and then leveraged into investments in big companies, companies taking out loans to buy back shares so they can give their CEO more money. You know, I mean, this is a process of, you know, kind of enriching people who are already well off and hurting people who aren't. And it's something I'm sure that in New Mexico, you know, people will understand this issue. I mean, because they're living with it too.
We're talking to Danny Schechter. I know you're not of the blame the victim school or blame the individual school, and I understand that. And at the same time, what you just said really made me wonder. In other words, kids demand stuff because of consumer culture, but their parents have to actually buy it for them in order for that to, you know, in order for them to get into debt with all of that stuff. Is there a movement against consumerism that's going along with all of this debt question?
Parents, you know, why do parents let their kids, their babies, stay in front of a TV set, you know, for hours on end as a babysitter? Because there takes more people in the family to make an income today, what one wage earner earned, now it takes two or three to earn the same amount. So everybody is in this kind of financial squeeze often, and they're subject to a lot of pressure. I mean, kids often are dictating, you know, if you go to a supermarket with your kid, they have, you know, they've been already brainwashed about brands that they want. You should get this cereal and that cereal, and I want this and I want that. You know, parents have to be tough enough to not only challenge that, but also to try to inculcate other values about savings, about being smart about money and all the rest of it. And, you know, I'm afraid that's not happening as much as it could or should, because people are bewildered by what's happening. There's a 0% card. There's a, you know, they don't realize that the late fees have doubled, that, you know, that you can lose the 0% very quickly if you miss a payment, et cetera, and so forth. So, you know, everything sort of sounds good and looks good until you get into it and you can't get out of it.
Here's the big question. You have an escalating situation. You have more debt, more credit cards, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. The subtitle of the film is America Before the Bubble Bursts. What are the conditions under which the bubble bursts? What is the breaking point?
Well, you know, I can't say that with any precision, because most of the experts disagree about all of this. But I did read an article on a website called TheStreet.com about Wall Street, and there was an interview with the investor who manages Dick Cheney's money. You know, Cheney had to put all the millions he made at Halliburton into a blind trust while he's in office, you know. And so there's somebody managing that money and investing it. Anyway, I forget his name, but he gave an interview and he said, you know, the whole world is a bubble now. And it's not just one sector or asset class, as he called it, that's in trouble, but that all of these institutions, you know, add to this spending $2 billion a day in Iraq, all the borrowing that's being done to keep this whole machine going. I mean, all of this is going to add up. You know, there is a bill coming due, and we're going to have to pay it. And if we don't pay it, our kids will have to pay it. And this is something we have to be aware of. I mean, this whole subprime lending collapse, I mean, if you know, kind of reel the rack the tape back, and, you know, just, you know, 2 years ago, this was like, you know, get a cheap mortgage, you can be a homeowner, et cetera, and so, and a lot of people susceptible to that got into it. They even paid more for these subprime lending loans than they would for other loans, because in many cases they had bad credit records. Then they got into these homes trying to improve their lives, get a better school district for their kids or whatever, and suddenly the adjustable rate mortgages went up, the gas went up, the commuting costs went up, and they went down, and they are going down. And this is across the spectrum of American life. I mean, this is not just about being empathetic to someone in the third world who's suffering, but to look at what's happening in our own country and in our own neighborhoods and our own community, you know, to homes, people losing their homes and losing their hope. And that's what's really dreadful about this, because this is not just commodities here. This is people's families and their, you know, futures and their lives that are being damaged here. And we need a big wake-up call. That's what I'm hoping in Debt We Trust can become, a wake-up call to people who start learning about these issues and getting engaged and involved in them to fight for debt relief, to get active on these issues. There's a whole bunch of organizations working on responsible lending, working on trying to create some new regulations and rules to try to create a moratorium on foreclosures and all the rest of it. But it's not going to work unless people get involved and support these initiatives. You know, the system is failing. This is a market failure. Everybody's saying, well, trust the market. The market will solve all problems. Well, the market created these problems. The greed of the people manipulating the money created it. If you go to, you know, stopthesqueeze.org, we have a blog there, a debt blog, which has stories from all the financial publications, you know, the top experts in the field, talking about aspects of this story, and it's truly frightening.
We're talking to Danny Schechter. The film is called In Debt We Trust. There's a racial and class dimension to all of this, and a terrible irony that the poorest people end up paying more for credit, more for consumer goods. And there's this striking, sort of poignant moment for me in the film where somebody presents the anthropological finding that the poorest people are the most honest. They believe that they have the duty to pay their debts,
right.
And that makes their position even worse.
Yeah, that's somebody, Michael Hudson. Actually, it was a former chief economist at the Chase Bank, and he has a piece in Harper's Magazine, I think about 6 months ago, about serfdom, saying that what we're doing, we're moving now from capitalism to feudalism,
mm-hmm.
You know, that serfdom is coming back. In other words, people are tied to their debts the way, you know, serfs used to be tied to the land and to the land owner, and that we're moving into a country of, you know, the giants and the little people. And, you know, this is a gap which is, you know, almost unprecedented, because our country, in a sense, was always proudest of, you know, it's thriving middle class. Everybody can get rich. Everybody can do better. And increasingly, young people are finding they're doing worse than their parents, that they're not going to do better than their parents. Kids living at home in their 20s and 30s because they can't afford to live on their own. In other words, there's a story behind the stories that we're seeing of a great economic, prosperity and progress. You know, every year, I'm sure this is true in your neck of the woods too. You know, right on the 24th of November, right before Thanksgiving, you know, the Christmas shopping season starts, and all the TV trucks rush to the mall, and they're all saying, "It's never been better. There's never been more people. The shopping is great." You know, and of course, this is something the retailers love. You know, because it's basically giving people, quote, consumer confidence. Then, you know, Christmas comes along, and Visa issues a report, and Visa says, "Oh, results are disappointing this year." Then in January, people start returning everything because they can't afford to pay for it. So, you know, this is a cycle here of, and now we have, you know, lack of job creation in our country. I mean, there's all kinds of indicators of economic stagnation, which are, you know, pretty scary. And you know, you would think, given, you know, the affluence in our society and all the technologies and everything else, you know, we would be doing great. We're not. You know, the truth be told, some people are, but most people are not. And that's what needs to be discussed. That's why I'm hoping when I come to New Mexico and when we screen the film, people will come out and join us in a discussion afterwards about what we can do about this and hear what their neighbors have to say. Because most people don't like to talk about money. It's a private thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
et cetera and so forth. But when they're with a group of other people, they feel kind of permission, you know, to have their say and to talk about it. And you know, it's been very moving and very meaningful to be able to provoke or prompt that kind of conversation. That's what I think In Debt We Trust could do, and we're trying to screen it not just in theaters or at art centers, but also in people's homes on DVD, in communities, and in churches and schools. We think it's an issue that, you know, is extremely critical to our futures.
On top of all this, the national debt, as you alluded to before, is over $8 trillion. What's the relationship between the national debt, where basically we owe money to other countries, and consumer debt?
Well, yeah, there is a definite relief. First of all, people see how the government just racks up, you know, this debt. Why can't they do it too? You know what I mean? So it's a bad example for ordinary people. On the other hand, it's a testimony to the way in which everything is financed through debt, borrowing, and the rest. And you know, there doesn't seem to be any consequence for doing it. In New York, we have something called the National Debt Clock near Times Square, and they have to rebuild it because they're anticipating the national debt to go to $10 trillion. And they, you know, there aren't enough digits on the clock for that, you know. So this, of course, is something that is extremely important. This economist I referred to before, Michael Hudson, says in the film, he says, American, you know, we never repaid our debt to foreign central banks and to others. And, you know, that debt in the end may end up being written off and excused, you know, and renegotiated, as they say. You know, but our personal debt, you know, often it's hard to do that. I mean, sometimes you can call a credit card company, try to negotiate with them, and it works somewhat, you know. They might take off a late fee or try to give you a better interest rate or whatever if you threaten to, you know, dump the card and what have you. But, you know, it's very hard to get that kind of understanding. Yet when these companies need it, they get it right away. I mean, it's hard for when you file for bankruptcy, you have to pass a certain means test, whereas Enron didn't have to, or Global Crossing, or any of the big companies that have gone into bankruptcy so they could reorganize and come out of bankruptcy stronger economically. So
there's
one standard for them, one standard for us.
Well, there's also another thing that you bring up in the film in terms of double standards. When somebody is looking to give you a mortgage, they look at you very carefully and they decide whether you can pay it back or not. When someone wants to give you a credit card, there's no standards at all.
Right, exactly. So in other words, it's all basically what's in their best interest to do at any given time. The subprime lending, they deliberately sought out people that they knew couldn't pay back. And they got them not only to pay more for it, but to pay higher fees for it. So they were making more money on people with less money, if you will. You know, in other instances, when they, you know, they do proper mortgages, yes, of course, everything is scrutinized. And it's scrutinized down to, you know, you have to have somebody come in and look at your house. You have to sign all these documents, and they evaluate everything. They want to hold your lease, you know, et cetera, and so forth. You know, so they're out to protect themselves and enrich themselves. And they're very good at it because the legal system, the legal structure, is basically structured in a way that benefits them. And this is, you know, this is the problem, is that it's hard to get advice when you're doing this. Often the people who are offering advice are somehow tied into the credit card companies. You know, a lot of these credit counseling firms are funded by credit card companies, you know, to help you consolidate your debt. And the idea is, you know, if they figure you're not going to be able to pay back anything, they would prefer that you pay back something, obviously, so they can get something out of you. So this is the calculus, the game that's played, and we need to become a lot more savvy in this about our credit reports, our credit scores, our how to manage our finances. And unfortunately, everybody is so busy today, you know, not just busy with often more than one job, but also, you know, because our entertainment, our iPods, our this or that, our computers, our email, you know, we just like barely have time to function and have conversations with each other, in my experience. You know, maybe that's a New York thing where everybody's sort of plugged into some kind of technology.
Well,
and,
we
go into the elevator, people are emailing other people. They're not really talking to anybody.
Heavens. We had TV turn-off week here a couple of weeks ago where we talked about the value of turning off your television set for a whole week and not doing any entertainment in front of that. It's probably not quite as extreme as it is in New York, but I think this whole film illustrates a very important overriding point, which is that unfettered capitalism always results in the very extreme upward flow of wealth, and if you want to have any justice at all, it has to come from the people, and there has to be regulation based in fairness.
Well, I should have interviewed you, because that's, people in the film do make similar points to that, and that may be a bottom line. But getting to the bottom line, you know, I think you would find that people who haven't seen this film will find it really fascinating, because it helps us rethink, you know, how our economy operates and how these credit card companies operate, you know, and how people are trying in some ways to fight back against it with some success or lack of success, but recognizing the need to do that. And that's why, you know, kind of a documentary can be powerful in galvanizing people to get involved and get engaged. And, I'm really happy that, you know, I used to show films at the film festival in Taos, you know, and then that film festival sort of scaled back. And, you know, it's hard to find outlets for social issue documentaries that are really powerful statements on any issue. You know, if your name isn't Michael Moore or you don't have a big marketing budget behind you. So this is a problem that filmmakers face, too, because of the way our media system has become monopolized. I write about that on a website called mediachannel.org every day, about how the media system is limiting the diversity of viewpoints that we get in information about this. And one of the things we've done is we've created a campaign through an affiliate of Media Channel called Media for Democracy to reach out and send emails to all kinds of media organizations to ask them to do a better job of covering this debt issue in an ongoing way. So, I'm involved on different levels in trying to get this issue before the public, before politicians, before, you know, church pastors, before, you know, community groups, so that they recognize that if we do get together on this issue, we could have an impact.
Well, I would like to say in favor of social issues documentaries that this film is really fun to watch. I mean, it's not a downer in that way that, you know, a film about decapitation in Afghanistan or something. I mean, it's very interesting and you know, has a real sense of humor.
We actually commissioned, and I'm going to bring a copy for your station, a soundtrack. We have a CD with music from the film, which is, you know, kind of a lot of it was just written for the film by rap artists and even Broadway show tunes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of some of the people who were involved in the Billionaires for Bush movement, you know. So I've tried to use popular culture to help bring these points across and make this more interesting, because, you know, they call economics the dismal science. You know, when I worked at 2020, there was a phrase called MIGO. Have you ever heard that?
Uh-uh.
MIGO stands for my eyes glaze over. You know, if you watch something with too much detail and stuff, you know, you sort of tune out very quickly,
right?
You know, because it's either boring or it's bland or it's, you know, you don't know what they're talking about half the time, you know. So we're trying to make the debt issue an issue that's accessible to people. And I know that from the audiences that I've interacted with in New Mexico, there's a tremendous number of people who are very thoughtful about these issues, who care about all of this stuff, who are living in New Mexico to get away from some of the pressures that they maybe grew up with in other parts of the country. And
their coming here has driven up the housing prices.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the other side of it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have, the former chairman of Time Warner, you know, coming out there, et cetera, and so forth. Yeah, so obviously there are all of these contradictions in all of this. There are people who said, well, you're criticizing the media, but you're using all these media techniques to get the story across. Well, yeah, I mean, I plead guilty to that because I want people to watch it, and I want them to find watching it, you know, a good experience. I want them to go away thinking, hey, this matters, it's important. Let me tell my neighbors about it. Let me show it to my friends. You know, that's the idea here, you know, basically to use media to motivate and mobilize people to care about changes that we need in our culture and our society.
I had a friend over to watch it last night, and we had a long discussion afterwards about our relationship to the issues that were raised in that movie. And one of the questions that came up was, can we go back to a different kind, back or forward, I'd suppose, to a different kind of economy that would take the United States and its citizens out of debt so that that's not the way we're living?
Well, you know, can we? We may have no choice. Okay, this is the other thing, you know. If there is a massive recession, or if there is, God forbid, a depression, if the bubbles do burst, as many people think or fear they will, we may have no choice than to reorganize our lives in the same way that many of us realize that we can't be dependent on the same kind of energy anymore. We're looking for alternative sources of energy, different ways of living, you know, because we can't afford to live in unhealthy ways. We can't afford to eat the kind of food that gets us sick. We can't afford, you know, so all of the, we can't afford, you know, to have these wars anymore. So these issues are related in a way, and it's very important, you know, to ask these questions and to discuss them. And if you can do it in a place where other people are present and you can actually interact with other people and you can learn from them, that's a good thing, I think. You know, unfortunately, most of our media is really about pacification, not about energizing people to become active. It's about, you know, creating consumers, not promoting citizenship. And that's why independent films can make a difference or can at least contribute in some way. I'm not, you know, I don't want to make claims, you know, that aren't there, but they cost a lot of money to make. There, a lot of effort goes into it. We try really hard to make this interesting. I'm glad that, you know, the people who brought it to Santa Fe, you know, saw it before, liked it, thought others would like it. So, you know, we're trying to, you know, get this out there and also get support for independent media, independent filmmaking, sites like mediachannel.org and our InThatWeTrust.com site, you know, to try to get people to recognize there are alternatives, there are independent voices, and that you can choose, make a choice, just as you would not necessarily, although this isn't true of everybody, you wouldn't want to live on a, you know, all the McDonald's all the time kind of diet. You know, maybe you don't want to live on a mainstream media all the time diet either. And that's why I think your radio station has the audience it does, because people are looking for something that's intelligent, something that dignifies, that's worth listening to and worth being part of. And you know, that's becoming increasingly rare in the radio spectrum in America, unfortunately.
I think the food metaphor is very apt, because
ideas
are, well, no, I mean, ideas are nourishing. And when you're presented nothing but sort of junk food ideas on the media, you're going to turn into a junk food eater intellectually.
Right. But, you know, the difference here between this and, you know, in a way, for many people, media is an abstraction. They can deal with it. They can think they can live without it. But credit and debt and loans and, you know, paying your bills is something you have to confront. You can't avoid. You'd like to avoid it, but you can't avoid it. So it's something that you really need to know more about. And, you know, there's a reason why most of the coverage of these issues on television is about sort of identity fraud and consumer fraud and individual victims who tell, you know, their horrifying stories and all the rest of it, but with no analysis, no background, no explanation that helps you connect the dots. That's what I hope this film will contribute to, will help do. And that's why I'm hoping that people will come out and see it and help us get it out more widely, because, you know, it's a very difficult thing when you're up against the power of, you know, a handful of media companies. I mean, Murdoch is now on the verge of buying the Wall Street Journal. Reuters was just sold to a big Canadian conglomerate. We're carrying a story on Media Channel, you know, about when this company bought other stations, they began to count the number of pencils in the newsroom, cutting back right. their availability. Right. And a guy said, you know, it's a good thing they don't know that there is a two-sided toilet paper used in our toilets, or they'd cut that back too, you know. So this is what we're up against in the media and in America. You know, this kind of financialization, the commercialization of everything, and commodities, you know, everybody wants owning things and not really thinking about what that's doing to the quality of our lives. It's doing a lot. I mean, people who are deeply in debt, you know what? They can't sleep at night. They're living in fear. They're getting called all the time by, you know, credit companies.
And collections is a growth industry, as you point out.
Yeah, and there's a whole growth industry of people whose whole job is to foreclose on people's homes and strip them down and get your stuff into the street and, you know, and fix it up for the next buyer or sucker, whoever it might be. You know, so this is something that is almost invisible but extremely pervasive at the same time, if that can be. You know, that you don't really think about it, but then it slaps you in the face or bites you on the behind in some way, because, you know, you were late on payments or something came up that you didn't anticipate, some sort of medical issue or other form of distress where suddenly you don't have the money to pay, you know, Peter, so you have to borrow from Paul. And, you know, that whole cycle is very common, you know, and you know, so a lot of people can cope with it. But if you're are just in Detroit, which is now the capital of foreclosures just this week, and, you know, read about, you know, people on unlimited fixed incomes, old black families who have been in homes, you know, somebody's been in a home for 50 years, and they suddenly tacked on higher taxes and water bills, et cetera, because, you know, of the economic base slipping in Detroit, industries moving out and job loss and all the rest of it. And now these people are losing their homes, you know, after being in them for half a century and at being senior citizens without an ability to really afford anything. I mean, this is really tragic. And now, who's speaking for these people and who's hearing these people?
There are some people, as you point out in the film, in Washington, D.C., who do understand this and who warn of a crisis and see the current crisis that you're talking about. What are some of the things, what are some of the positive actions that you see people taking?
Well, I think there's a bunch of steps here. By the way, speaking of Washington, yesterday or 2 days ago, the Washington Post reported that the city, which has been traditionally an old black, largely black, a majority black city, is it will soon become a majority white city because of gentrification spurred by all this lending. So this is changing the face of America. This is happening in Atlanta and other cities, in Austin, Texas, and other cities as well, where you're having, you know, an actual transformation because of the condos, because of the people who fled the city, moving back into the city and driving other people out.
And where are the black folks going?
What?
Where are the black folks going?
Yeah, where are they going? They're going, they're becoming homeless, or they're going into, you know, a worse accommodation. So they have to, you know, look out their houses and see these white folks in big condos up the street. You know, this is an incredibly serious problem. What's being done? A, there have been some hearings. There's been hearings on credit cards where it was revealed that some $69 billion was spent last year by Americans on late fees and interest. Okay? There's been action at the state level, as I mentioned, in New York on student lending, and there are other proposals to protect people in predatory lending situations, and that seems to be happening. Of course, you're up against the banks, which are the most powerful institution in America in terms of political, you know, their primary donors to political campaigns.
Well, they spent untold amounts of money to get the bankruptcy bill passed.
Yeah, I mean, we revealed in the film, they were quoting a study, a book that was done, that $154 million was spent to get one piece of legislation through. So, you know, you're up against big money and a lot of major forces that are trying to work on this. Now, incidentally, one of the congressmen, Bob Ney of Ohio, who is the spokesperson for the credit card industry, is now in prison because of his, you know, taking money through Jack Abramoff. You know, so there's a lot of scandals in all of this. So, you know, we're talking about action by attorney generals at the state level, congressional initiatives on student lending, which actually passed the House. We're talking about efforts to promote community awareness and against the practices of predatory lenders and to try to fight against those practices and expose them. But all of this requires public awareness. All of this requires people getting mad as hell and they won't take it anymore. And those people will get that way if and when they get the facts. They find out what's really happening. That's what I'm hoping a film like In Debt We Trust can do, is inform people and get them moving and get them involved and, you know, get them on the StopTheSqueeze.org website and signing up to get involved in this campaign, because this is a matter of life and death, really, for many people. If you lose your home, where are you going to go?
Right.
You know, and 2 million families are facing that problem. So they move in with somebody else, and, you know, their whole quality of life goes down. You know, it becomes harder and harder to cope, to survive, and all the rest of it.
It's so, actually time for us to go, Danny Schechter.
Okay.
And
I could go on and on, as you can see.
Well,
but
believe
really
it or not, there's so much that we didn't even get to, ladies and gentlemen,
well,
in our Radio Land audience.
I must say, it's the first time you and I have spoken. You're really thoughtful, and, you know, this community is lucky to have you on the radio because you really thought about all this and done your homework, which a lot of hosts don't do. And I hope people will come out and see In Debt We Trust.
So we'll see you on Thursday and Friday, the 24th and the 25th, at the Center for Contemporary Arts right here in Santa Fe. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org, and we are podcasting. You can find us at santafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can send me an email at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz. Thank you.